Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is the Writer's Lounge. This is show number 76, December 22nd, 2014. It's the last show of the year for us as we head into a new year in another couple of weeks. So introducing the show, this is the show, of course, where we showcase new authors, and I am your host, Tom Riddell, bringing on Robin here in a couple of minutes. A brief intro to today's show, we have on Carolyn Bennett. And she wrote a fiction tale called Coast to Coast Paranormal Investigation, The Journey Underneath. And not only will we be talking about fiction, we'll be talking about fact, too. Well, I mean, you kind of understand that paranormal investigation sometimes gets a raw deal in the press, and we'll talk a little bit about that and how we do everything, because I am a paranormal investigator also. What else we got here? Oh, okay. The Writer's Lounge blog, of course, can be found over at tomriddell.com/blog, and you can listen to all the interviews on the blog over there, because we have a Blog Talk Radio player in the upper left-hand corner of the page, and you can find us on Facebook on the Blog Talk Radio site. Just click it and go over there and give us a like. And then on Twitter, you can follow us, and if you would like the old-fashioned way, if you prefer sending an email, you can do that, twl11@yahoo.com. And upcoming guest authors, on January 5th, 2015, MJ Morries comes on with a book by the name of Time's Tempest, The Challenges of Xania, and it'll be on January 5th, so mark your calendars for that. We have a sponsor for today's show, and it is always Magic Pen Web Design. Offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Fill out the free estimate form over at magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. If you would like to give us a call here on the show on the Writer's Lounge, you can do that. Toll free at 877-878-1436 or the regular line at 626-213-5613. And here now is our fabulous co-host, Robin Eduardo. I run out of adjectives for you because you're so many things to me.
So I'm fabulous today.
You're fabulous, always.
Thank you.
I have to say, it's funny that we're talking about the paranormal, and you had posted on Facebook, I believe it would be a brownstone, and it was gorgeous, and I agree with you.
Oh,
but I also
yes.
think that I'd love to go and investigate there, because I really think that place is haunted. I could tell just by looking at it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, the architecture was wonderful, and the way they had it painted was just, it's magical when you see some of these older buildings with all the sculptural, you know, the way the windows are shaped and the doors and the eaves and all that stuff and some of the old Victorian homes with the gingerbread and the way they had it painted was in teal and purple and lilac and it just the way they the colors blended one into the other and the way it was laid. It was so delightful. I saw that picture. I said, I have to share this. I wouldn't doubt that there's something, you know, some type of history in that building. I mean, I would love it if there was some type of little friend following me around from room to room, making noises. I wouldn't be afraid.
When you look at something like that, you have to admire the detail of
people
back then and how much time and thought went into just designing that building. It's not like today where everything is like prefabricated and built from
rectangles on top of a larger rectangle on top of a bigger rectangle.
Sure.
That's how houses are just so square like that. And even though that house, of course, it was just a tall, I think it was three stories. I believe so. I don't have the image in front of me, but I believe it was about three stories. It definitely had an attic, and I know those old homes had those wonderful staircases that led up into the attic. So I could just imagine what it must have looked like on the inside, because the outside was just amazing.
Yeah.
With the details.
I wonder if people really were more interesting back in those days, because we're so stressed, and we, you know, got to run here, got to run there. We're on our cell phones all the time. Back then, I think a lot of people had time, a little bit of extra time to sit down and think about things than we have today. I really began to think about that the other day as I was looking at some of these old buildings. And, of course, some of the buildings that we've gone into here in Minnesota and investigated are awesome. And I hope to get back into doing some more paranormal investigating soon, I hope. I'm pretty busy with everything else going on in my life, but I would like to get back into doing that. And then Carolyn is waiting in the queue. She will be here shortly at 15 after the hour, wherever you're at. And really looking forward to that. But I wanted to ask you, what do you think, Robin? Do you believe in ghosts? I know we talked about it briefly one other show we had. We had a paranormal person on before, but I'm just wondering where you're at with all that stuff.
You know, there's a part of me that's a skeptic, but there's also a part of me that is curious. And it's sort of like being an agnostic. I suppose if it happened to me, then it would make it all that more real. But I do not discredit the stories that I've heard from other people. Everybody's experience is their own. And, of course, we don't know everything in the world, and there's a lot of unexplained things out there. And I do believe that we have energies. I mean, I don't want to get into a religious discussion, but more of a philosophical thing that, you know, there is a life energy, and there's a difference between being alive and then not alive. Like a stone doesn't have energy because it's never been a living thing, but there are living things within it, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So where does that energy go, and where does it come from, and how do we all relate to each other and to everything in nature? So, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
But it's definitely an interesting topic.
Yeah, I've been doing it since 2010, and I can tell you that I've had experiences. I haven't seen a full-blown apparition yet. I haven't seen an actual ghost. I have team members that have, but I have not. Mm-hmm. But I have experienced conditions through our equipment that wouldn't, I would say, be normal. We have severe temperatures and temperature changes dropping within, say, 5 to 10 seconds, you know, from, I would say, probably 10 degrees. I think I remember it being the most severe drop in temperature. And then, of course, our EVPs, which would be the electrical voice phenomenon that we pick up when we're doing recording, that we play back the recorder after we've done the sweep, and we've picked up stuff there. So It's really interesting, but like you said, I think a lot of people go into it very skeptical, and I myself am still very skeptical, and I think it's healthy to be, and I can't wait to talk to Carolyn, not just about her book, which is based on a paranormal investigating team, but I'd like to hear what she has to say about her experiences, because I think her and I have got about the same amount of time as far as investigating is concerned. I think she started around the same time I did. So it'll be interesting to talk to her and to get her take on all those things. And her book was really well written, extremely well written. In fact, I had said it was in the top five of the books that I've read this year. I would say that that book stands out as a bookshelf book. So I'm really looking forward to that. But I know what else is going on in your life? Anything exciting?
Well, I mean, I'm going to relate it, even though it's not related. But I think I also mentioned I went antiquing over the weekend for my anniversary. And we were digging around because I had seen these little rooster statues that I wanted for my antique hutch in my kitchen. And I couldn't locate them, but I'm rooting around and digging around and looking underneath. This one place that we go to is quite cluttered. But if you dig, you can usually find some good treasures. And, well, I found this little, well, not little. She's quite large. She's about I want to say maybe 24-inch or maybe even taller, old composition doll from the 1920s, 1930s. She might be Madame Alexander, but I'm not 100% sure. I still have to do a little bit more research on her. But she's pretty interesting because she was buried underneath a shelf with some other stuff piled on top of her, but I saw her foot sticking out, and so I immediately moved everything, and I just a feeling overcame me, and she was just so, I don't know, grungy looking and crackled, and her eyes were very faded, and I picked her up and I held her close to me and I said, "Don't worry, I'm going to rescue you."
Wow.
But her eyes are faded to yellow, like an amber color, so they're kind of spooky. They just stare blankly, and then her mouth is open and there's something cloth inside, but it's very, very red. And I was a little creeped even to put my finger near her mouth. I have to laugh at myself because, I mean, she's spooky looking, but I think that's why I loved her so much. And I named her Emily, and she's my haunted doll. So maybe she is haunted, who knows? Or she hasn't revealed anything yet. And I've had her, two, three days now, so...
As
who
long
knows?
As she's not related to Chucky, that'll be fine.
Well, I was saying she can give that Annabelle doll a run for the money.
Oh, yeah.
That movie Annabelle, a couple of weeks ago. They're pretty spooky.
I haven't seen that movie yet, have you?
Oh, you have to. Yeah, she's... excuse me, Annabelle is an evil entity that's embodied within a doll, and so she tries to get mothers to kill their own children and things like that through possession. Hope my Emily doesn't.
Yeah, no, just keep an eye on her, that's all.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
but she's pretty cool looking.
Yeah. Let's get on with the show here, and hopefully I can get through this review. I've got a little bit of a cough coming on. I think it's
this time
of year, and I can feel it tickling my throat, so I'll try to get through here. We'll do fine. Coast to Coast Paranormal Investigation, The Journey Underneath, was written by Carolyn Burnett. I'm sorry, Bennett. Bennett. Carolyn Bennett. Sorry. And published by Trafford in 2013. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. This is what Amazon has to say about the book. 8 years after her young husband's death, Lee McLeod was finally able to realize her dream of starting her own paranormal investigative team. They set out to investigate some of the most haunted locations in Canada and the United States. Coast to Coast was only team given permission to investigate the notorious Greenhurst Hospital, closed for over 20 years. No team had been allowed in because of reports of violent entities attacking those brave enough to sneak in after dark. As the team began their biggest investigation yet, they were not prepared for what was waiting for them in the dark halls of Greenhurst. Uncovering the mysteries of Greenhurst could be dangerous, even fatal, for coast-to-coast investigators. And here's what I had to say about the book. Lee McLeod has a passion for investigating the paranormal, and she also has a passion for the music of a well-known singer, Aidan Lawson. She's a fan. Aidan Lawson has a passion for the paranormal and a certain paranormal investigator by the name of Lee McLeod. Neither of them has ever met or knows of the other's feelings for each other until they meet at Greenhurst, where they eventually investigate the dark and foreboding halls of the abandoned hospital together. Immediately, the coast-to-coast team is met with an evil presence, and all of their lives are changed forever. As a paranormal investigator myself, I've encountered numerous paranormal experiences, but being fearful of the dark and what or who resided in it is rare. I've also read many horror stories where my heart has quickened its beat, but this story literally sent a chill through me. In my opinion, what made this story so good was the author's ability in developing the main character, Lee, into a very likable person. Most readers will find that they have a strong empathy for Lee and the horrors that she goes through. This story has everything, a very good balance of romance, love, heart-pounding excitement, and a revelation at the end that will have you wanting to start reading book number two of the series right away. This book is one of my favorites of 2014. And with that, let's bring on Carolyn Bennett all the way from Canada. Carolyn?
Good evening, Tom. Good evening, Robin.
Hi.
How are you?
Hi. I'm very well. Thank you for having me this evening.
Yeah, I've got to tell you, Robin, that Carolyn had talked to me or chatted with me and had informed me that she's nervous. And as we tell all of our new authors on the program, we give them a very strong dose of drugs. So I hope, Carolyn, that those drugs are kicking in. And I'm sure you will be fine once Robin and I are done with you here.
Oh, my goodness. Carolyn, I'm always nervous. I think every single show, and we've been doing them for a while, every single show that I do, I'm incredibly nervous. And I don't know why that is. It's just a strange thing. I don't want to mess it up and hog the show and maybe lose my words, which I often do, but Tom reins me in and you'll be just fine. He'll rein you in too.
you'll do fine, I'm sure, Carolyn. Carolyn,
let's start off
here. Could you read an excerpt from your book, and then could you tell us a little more about yourself and what inspired you to become a writer?
Okay. So the part of the book that I've chose to read a bit tonight about is the point where Lee and her team from Coast to Coast Paranormal Investigations is just arriving at Greenhurst Asylum. And I chose this because it's very foreboding of what's about to happen. So it really sets the tone for what's about to happen once they get inside Greenhurst. So I start with, I decided that the feeling of dread was just my mind overreacting. Besides, there isn't a guy on this team who wouldn't put themselves in front of danger to protect me, and vice versa. It's not expected. It's just the way we are. We have three rules. Protect each other, protect the evidence, and never stop recording until I say so. We stopped for a hot breakfast and then drove the final hour to our location. As we approached the facility, we made our way up a steep hill. Over the crest of the hill, you could see the building nestled down in the valley below. It was a large three-story gray stone structure. I'm sure that when it was built in the early 1900s, it was magnificent. But now, decades of neglect and reclamation by nature make it seem like a creepy shadow of its former self. You could see where vines have slithered into the building, snaking through the hallways, like the insidious screams that are reported to travel from one end of the building to the other. animals have gotten in as well. That was something to keep an eye out for. Birds, bats, raccoons, and other small animals are usually found to be the culprit of a lot of paranormal evidence in abandoned buildings. The forest surrounded the building, almost completely engulfing it, as if Mother Nature herself wanted to keep people out. As soon as the building came into view, I became violently ill. "Jake, pull over now," I yelled, trying not to throw up in our new van. Before the van came to a complete stop, I hopped out and vomited several times. And there it was again, that feeling of dread. Something was very wrong here. Weakened by the purging of breakfast and with a raspy voice, I called out to Chris to come out and bring the camera. "What's up, boss?" "Chris, just stand there and turn the camera on. Start recording everything from this point on. I want to have it on record that as soon as I saw this building, I had a horrible feeling that something's going to go terribly wrong today. Someone could get seriously hurt. This is the first time I've ever had the urge to cancel an investigation." After rinsing that awful post-vomit taste out of my mouth, I gathered my strength and turned to face the building. I stared at it momentarily, then bravely issued a challenge. "I don't know who's in there making me feel that way, but we are not leaving. You might frighten us, but we will not run away." I turned away from the building and back to face Chris. "Chris, this is what I need from you. No matter what happens, no matter what you hear or see, or even if someone is dragging my dead body out of there, you do not turn that camera off. Under no circumstances do you stop videotaping unless I tell you to." That's the end of the excerpt that I chose to read.
All right. And then a little bit more about yourself and what inspired you to become a writer.
Well, unlike you, I started investigating probably 2010, 2011. I did have a little bit of time off in between, and what happened was about a year before I wrote Coast to Coast, I had to give up paranormal investigating. As a single parent, I was working at a job that had me working mostly evenings and weekends, just kind of barely making it through supporting my son and myself, so I couldn't afford the extra expense of traveling to locations and most of the time I couldn't get the time off work to go, so in all fairness to my team, I had to resign my spot as an investigator. But that was really a painful decision. It really left a void in me, and I needed something to fill that void, to kind of feed that desire to want to keep investigating. And that's where I started writing kind of short stories about paranormal investigating, and then a friend of mine who is also an author, she helped coach me through how to go from short stories to full-length novels. And Coast to Coast was born.
Very good. Very good. And I think, as I said, you and I share about the same experience in paranormal investigating. I started in 2010. And I just wanted to say, Carolyn, that as you were reading there, I remember the chills going through me when you started writing about Greenhurst, and I was reading about Greenhurst, but the snaking and slithering of vines, I think, got me into that mood where you, and I think Robin would agree that when you start off writing a horror story, there are certain words and adjectives that you have to use to sort of rope the reader and pull them in and then not let them go. And I think that was the key right there. And I find it interesting how just a couple words will do that. Wouldn't you agree, Robin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the vivid imagery, the way you use the words to you know, tease that out in your imagination really helps. And it does. It pulls you in and makes you want to read more. So that's really good.
Well, thank you.
Are there any things, you know, the main character in your story, obviously, we just talked about it. And I have to tell you, too, Carolyn, that as I was reading it, the first, several pages, I began wondering whether I was reading fiction or nonfiction. Because I thought I was reading fiction because you had mentioned it, and I thought that that's where it was located, was in that genre. But I had this feeling that I was reading about you. And I thought, wow, this is actually a true story. And then I found out, no, this isn't Carolyn. This is about Lee. And it's that real life stuff that you bring into your story that I find fascinating. Are there any events that happen in the book that have actually happened to you in real life?
As far as the paranormal investigation pieces, no. I mean, thankfully, nothing like that's ever happened to me or anyone I know at a real investigation. You know, outside of the movies and maybe some, you know, exaggerated things on the TV shows, you know, we've never heard of anything like that happening. I will be honest. The beginning of the story, when you are being introduced to Lee and you're learning about her background and how she became interested in the paranormal, a lot of that is actually based on my own personal experiences.
Right.
A
lot of it is very personal. A lot of it is true. I did become interested in, well, I've always had an interest in it. Mm-hmm. And if you've kind of always been on the edge of it and being interested in it, then you have a very profound loss in your life. It just brings out even more, and that's what happened to me when after my husband was diagnosed with cancer, and we went through, you know, kind of 2 years of cancer treatments and all that, and it really then even makes you question more about the paranormal and life on the other side. And what Robin was talking earlier about our spirit energy, like, what happens when you die? I don't just become a rock. Something has to happen to my spirit energy. Where does it go? And whether or not you believe in, you know, reincarnation or a spirit world or whatever your beliefs are, to me, it's still all some experience of life after death.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah,
that's
Robin,
the big question.
Robin, you have any questions?
My questions would be: are any of the characters? I mean, we know that Lee is not you, but is the story based on or loosely based on anybody that you know aside from your own experiences?
Not personally, no. I think just
inspired.
Over the years, there could be, you know, little bits and pieces from different people, either that I know or maybe people that are sort of within that family possibly have had some influence on me, but there isn't any one character that is based on sort of one person.
Yep, and then,
I was wondering, I'm sorry, how has your life and belief system changed since you become a paranormal investigator? You know, were you a believer before? Are you a believer now? Are you skeptical? And then found out the truth?
You know, one of the things is you become a lot more, you don't become more skeptical, because what we're investigating is we're helping people who believe there's something happening. And we don't have sort of the right, I don't think, to sort of take that belief away from them sometimes. But I think I've become a little more wise and a little more, you know, knowledge about what could be paranormal, and developing the skill to see, you know, what could be paranormal and what can have a rational explanation. There's nothing that drives me more crazy, and that's why I don't watch paranormal shows anymore, is, you know, something zips across the screen, and, oh, my God, it's an orb. Oh, God, I hate the whole orb fiasco. And it drives me crazy when they say, and we can debunk that wasn't a bug or a dust. How the hell can you do that?
Right.
So you become a little bit more aware of the evidence and of what it could and couldn't be. And I think just with each investigation, you just get smarter about it. And then you bring that sometimes back into your own experiences as well, because I have had my own personal experiences. But I think I'm a little more knowledgeable now on how to differentiate between, is this something that's really happening, or is there a logical explanation for it? You don't just make that jump anymore.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I got you.
And then
good.
In my personal life, too, you know, I've been with my group up here in Ontario, Canada, the Canadian Haunting and Paranormal Society, also known as CHAPS. I've been with them, I said, since off and on since 2010, and we have really developed, like, this is another family for me. We're a fairly large group. We're not just located in one city. We're actually spread out across sort of central, eastern, and southern Ontario, so we cover a big part of the province. So we don't get to see each other every time, so we will quite often do, like, social events, not quite often, you know, maybe once or twice a year, just to get together as a group, and it's kind of like having a family reunion again for us, because we only get to see each other sometimes once or twice a year. So, I mean, I have my work life and my family life here, and then I have my CHAPS family. And it's very important, because sometimes the other parts of your life, you know, whether it be your places where you work or your own family, they don't blend with that part of your life. Either, you know, they don't believe in what you're doing, or they just think it's a hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, well, how many hobbies take you to, you know, some of the places we've been, you know. But you have this like-minded set of friends now, and you'll have them for life.
That support you. Yeah, that support you in your interests and really help you develop that side of you that is you, not what everybody else wants you to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm definitely interested. I know Tom was doing the paranormal investigations too, and he's told me a lot of stories and things, and it's just pretty interesting. I know there's some around here. I'm in New Jersey. There's some around here. I just, again, like you said, when you're working and you have family, to find the time to do it is just so hard.
It is.
Also, you wrote, and then you wrote this book, which is pretty cool, you know, to squeeze out the time to do that. how long did it take you to write the book?
Well, the interesting thing is, once I started book one and I finished book one, I had to keep going because it just kept coming. So I actually wrote all three books in the first draft
before
I even got book one out, because it just wouldn't stop. It just it just kept going. So I'm going to say that probably took 6 to 8 months. And a lot of that was because I had never written a book before. So, at first, it needed a lot of work. As I said, I had a friend who helped me kind of go from short stories to full-length novels. And then, you know, started the process of refining book one and getting ready to push that baby out into the world, which is a whole new experience.
I think so many things are going to relate to here with you and ghost hunting. Me too. I've got a group here in Minnesota that I think of as family, and down through the years, we've really gotten very close. So it's part family, it's part interest. It's a lot of helping residents and families to try and figure out what's happening in their houses, especially when there's little kids involved. And that's what we're all about, is helping, not so much being famous, because I think that comes second. But anyway, back to your book, Carolyn. In your book, there's a character who is gay, and he is featured in the mainstream of the story. That would be Aiden. And I think it's great that you introduce him as a fun-loving, normal kind of guy. When first developing the story in your imagination, how did Aiden reveal himself to you?
Well, how do you reveal himself to me? I was kind of looking for somebody, for a character that there would be a strong connection to Lee, but not in a romantic sense. They would never be involved romantically. And so when I wrote Aiden, she was already aware of Aiden. Like, she knew who he was. She loved his music. She didn't know him personally, but she was a huge fan of his music. She felt a personal connection to his songs. In the book, she says that when she listens to his music, she feels like his fingers are running through her soul. So I was developing a bond between these two before they even met. but I wanted to make sure that I could never take that bond to the next step, to a romantic level.
Yes.
So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I think it was very well
done.
Their
relationship and their connection becomes clearer throughout book one and into book two. And I knew people were going to sort of, if I wasn't careful, people were going to be sort of thinking ahead that this was going to be like a romantic involvement between a paranormal investigator and a rock star, and I didn't want
that.
So.
Yeah, and speaking about book two, I do have the review for book two up. I just put it up today over at tamrigal.com/blog. So it is up there for review. It's called Coast to Coast Paranormal Investigation, The Journey Back. And I found it very well written, as I did the first book. So I'm now patiently waiting for the third book. Excuse me. But anyway, you did scare me, as I had mentioned in the beginning of the show. And what I would like to know, do you ever scare yourself when you're writing?
Not by the stories themselves. I think sometimes you get a little scared about what you think about. And as far as being afraid of writing about something like that, that like that could happen on a paranormal investigation, I've never scared myself that something like that could happen, because I've never encountered any place that's been so evil that you would remotely think something like that is possible. I think what would scare me more, though, is that as a team, there's this inherent trust in each other, and the thought that an evil presence could affect a member, like one member of your team, when you're vulnerable like that, and that it could be so devastating. That would be terrifying, because you're there, you're in the middle of the night, it's pitch dark, and you're trusting these people, and that something could happen to one of them that could change everything. That, to me, would be scary.
So it's safe to assume. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that it's safe to assume that when you're writing, you're not sitting in a tiny office with the lights real low and it's the middle of the night. Some people write at night. That's the only quiet time that you have. But you're
actually
coming to a juicy scene and then a little noise, scratches behind you or something. I mean, do you creep yourself out or no? Not really.
I actually wrote all three books at night, and for several reasons. Most of the shifts that I worked, I worked evenings, so I would work, one till I wouldn't get home till 10 o'clock at night, and I didn't start till, one the next day. So I was writing from 10:30 till 2 or 3 in the morning, because that's when it was quiet. No TV, no phone calls.
Yeah, no distractions.
And I'd have kind of low music on in the background, and I always just sort of set my own ambience for my books.
Yeah, the mood.
Yeah, that's
it's not
really
a Halloween neat soundtrack, though.
No.
That would be funny.
Yeah.
It was a howl.
That is really interesting, because I think, of course, when we go investigate, we always investigate at night. Well, most times we do, for the places that we've been in. And I think that it's interesting that to get in that frame of mind for actually writing a story, you would have to put yourself in that same element, which is darkness sometimes. It's darkness.
Yeah.
We sit there and we investigate in the dark. We don't investigate in the light. We turn all the lights out and we sit there and we turn our machines on and we start watching and listening. And that's, I guess that's kind of scary just thinking about. But I think Carolyn would agree.
Yeah.
We don't go out and we're not scared when we investigate. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. But if something strange happens, and there has been some things in the investigations that I've been on, some very strange and I don't want to say scary, but some very unnerving things have happened to us on investigations, where you really do have to question what's out there, what are we dealing with. And I think Lee, when she goes into this abandoned hospital, is dealing with the same sort of thing. She's very experienced, but she goes in there and she meets up with this evil kind of spirit. And everybody else, of course, on the team is concerned with what's happening to her. But I really find it interesting, too, Carolyn, that they have a lot of really neat equipment that I wish I had.
I know, eh? It's like, what would I want if I could have the money to get any equipment I wanted?
Yeah, equipped with a van, too. Of course, well, we won't. I'm not going to say any more about the story because I don't want to give away what's in it. But I think that you hit it really well. I think any investigator that's out there would love to be a member of Coast to Coast because of all the neat toys that they have out there. So
yeah. I'd love to have half those toys on our team.
Speaking of,
that reminds me, have you ever been in any, obviously not the same events that happened in Greenhurst Hospital, but have you been in any places that were just as creepy as Greenhurst? Or interesting as Greenhurst?
I'd say the sort of the two big locations that I've been in, the first one was Waverly Hills.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
And when you pull up to Waverly Hills, at first, especially your first time and as a new investigator, it's a little overwhelming. But even I'd say more creepy than Waverly Hills was Moundsville State Penitentiary in West Virginia. One of the few investigations where I'd say I probably got two or three good scares. Heard some things afterwards on EVPs that I'm glad I didn't hear while I was there.
Oh, I'm so excited. A friend of mine, his cousin, he's also a paranormal investigator, and I was invited for a sleepover there actually about a year ago, and they were saying something about I believe that was the location. I know it was in West Virginia, but it just sounded so interesting, but we just never got it together. We're supposed to get a group together and stay overnight in a place. I've never done anything like this before. So hopefully it'll come to fruition in the near future before I get too old to really enjoy it and not have a heart attack in the middle of the night.
But again, Moundsville was kind of typical of a lot of investigations, and Tom will probably agree with me, where you can spend 5-6 hours walking around with your equipment and talking to your voice recorder and get nothing, or think you get nothing.
Right, right.
And then you go home, and all of a sudden on evidence review, the EVPs, kind of make you pull back and go, wait a minute.
They played an EVP for me. Yeah, they played an EVP, and you could very clearly hear the voices whispering, and some of the words you could make out, and some of them you couldn't, but you could definitely hear somebody speaking, and it wasn't anybody that was there. It was just something that got picked up in the background, and so you could hear them speaking on the tape, but then you heard this whispering in the background that was none of them that were there. And they weren't, like you said, they weren't aware of it at the time, but when they played it back, they picked it up and said, wow, did you hear that at the time? No, I didn't. And so the hairs, and then they were teasing me because they kept playing it back over and over and over again, and the hairs were standing up on my arms. And
it's a very interesting feel. Getting back to the fears, Carolyn, I know we have fears when we're out there, some of us might have fears investigating, but what about the writing process and how your book might be received or not received? That can be scary sometimes.
Yes.
That was terrifying the first time, and just as terrifying the second time. And, I likened it earlier, I think, to, taking your first child and sending them off to school, putting them on the bus to go to school for the first time. Mm-hmm. What if no one likes them? What if, someone picks on them or teases them? And that's how it felt. Like, you literally feel sick. And you'll hold off, and I almost overread the book to death. I mean, I almost edited it to death because every time I'd be ready to send it, I would pull it back.
Yeah.
You get ready and I'd pull it back. And you just have to say, enough. I'm either doing this or I'm not. You know, and then you what happens, happens. You know.
Any feedback from any paranormal friends or paranormal groups?
I've actually had a few paranormal investigators buy my book. They seem to be the ones who enjoy it the most. One of the things I am finding, too, is sort of in that whole paranormal genre, I think the genre of paranormal and supernatural are kind of getting blurred. So when people think that they're reading a book about the paranormal, they're thinking more, they're going towards more of the supernatural. So that's not what my book is. It's about paranormal investigating. But when paranormal investigators have read my book, they really enjoy it. And that's what matters to me, because obviously I'm a paranormal investigator. And if I'm writing crap, you know, and a paranormal investigator thinks it's crap, then, you know, I need to rethink what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I have had someone read my book that made a comment about, well, this isn't a horror story. I've never presented it as a horror story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a paranormal thriller, you know? So,
and
but to get validation from your, I'm sorry, Tom.
To get validation
from your peers, it's a big thing. Yeah, because it's not really about the horror side of it or monsters and demons coming out to get you. I mean, you're as an investigator, you're trying to find out what's really going on. So you really have to have a more critical eye and not, you know, fall into those flights of fancy and, you know, allowing your imagination to get away from you. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, sorry. Sorry, I was going to say something and it just completely
left. It's okay, hon. No, it's okay. It's okay. How do good or bad reviews influence you? Have you received any bad reviews or at least, I shouldn't say bad reviews. That's not a good term to use. But anything that a negative critique that you could use to help you or even in good reviews you can receive positive critiques that help you improve.
Absolutely. And I remember the first time when I got my first 2-star review, and I was devastated. And then I have this other friend. I have a lot of friends in the paranormal community and in the writing community. And you know, I had one of them that said to me, he was just trying to help me understand how these reviews work. And when it comes to the negative reviews, what I'm finding is there's basically two types. There are some, because that's just not their kind of story. It's not their cup of tea. Again, that whole line between paranormal, supernatural, thrillers is getting blurred to me in writing. So they're expecting the supernatural and the vampires and the demons.
Yeah.
And that's
not
what paranormal investigating is about. So they didn't like it. So they gave it a 2 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a problem with my book.
Sure.
And that took me a long time to realize that that doesn't mean it was a bad book and that I can't appeal to everyone.
That's right.
And that,
and I'm sorry, I just wanted to say, just for your own benefit and any other author that's out there, particularly Amazon or Goodreads, those are not reviews. What you're receiving on your book or any product that's, you know, it doesn't have to be a book, it could be any product, but those are not reviews, those are customer comments. And I think when you put it in that context, you realize that, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, and all they're doing is leaving a comment based on their own opinion, and it's personal. Of course, there are reviewers who you know, cross lines and everything, but I mean, those people, usually those reviews, everybody could see them for what they are, you know. So when you think about it in that term, reviews are really, it's a whole different ball game, and you take it in stride and you try to find something, you know, that silver lining even in the negative reviews that can help you grow as an author. So I'm glad to hear you say that.
One of the things that I learned from some of the negative reviews or, you know, opinions, because book one was my first book. It was my first time writing. And, you know, my writing skills still needed a bit of work. I don't have a problem admitting that. It was my first time. You know, I didn't have a professional editor. And so I had some comments about that. You know, people love the story, but, you know, this needed to be a little cleaner. That's where it sort of became, people were becoming editors. But I learned from that, and I learned that I did have to tighten my writing style. And I do feel that book two is cleaner and tighter that way. But you know what? There are some things I'm not going to change. I write predominantly in the first person because I now have, and this is going to sound weird, and I think you have to be a writer to understand, I now have created a bond with my characters because I wrote in the first person. I've created a personal bond with my characters. So when I did have some comments about people not liking books and written in the first person, I tried to change that, and I couldn't. Because then I lost that connection to my own characters. And if I lost that connection, then my readers are going to lose that connection.
Right.
And so that's when I realized, you know what, these are my stories. This is how I like to write them. I can't please everyone.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I've got to say, Carolyn, that, I've been reviewing over 75 books now in the last several years, and your book stands out as one of the best. I would say at least in the top 10 or top 15 books that I've reviewed, yours is way up there. And that was book number one. As you know, I gave book number one 5 stars, and I gave book number two 4 stars, because I have a certain system that I work on. Not so much as critiquing the author and the writing style, but the story itself and how I feel about the story after I'm done reading it. Even though it fell 1 star, I told another friend of mine who's written a series that you can't always have a 5-star review in your series, because there's got to be a lull in the story at some point that isn't, you know, there can't be excitement all the time. You've got to drop it off a little bit. And that's basically what happens when I go from a 5 to a 4. Very rarely do I ever write a 3-star, but they're out there. And I've written a couple 2s also, but I don't post those. So as far as, from a reviewer's standpoint, I think you did very well, and I would challenge anybody on your book if they were to give you a 2-star. I there's no way that book's a 2-star. No, it doesn't even come close.
It's okay. You know, as I said, you know, it took a few of those reviews and a lot of help from some friends within the writing community for me to understand what they meant. And now that I do, I look at those as either learning opportunities or it's just someone that I'm never going to please. So I'm not going to try. I can't please everybody. And what people have to understand is the intensity in book one. We now have to have a transition because, you know, what happened in book one, that team was decimated. It has to rebuild and regrow.
Absolutely.
And so part of book two is rebuilding and regrowing. I could just have kind of skipped right over that, and you know, there could have been a brand new team and just hitting the pavement again. But I felt that people need to understand that these characters had to rebuild their lives. They had to start over again after what happened and what was involved in that. You know, you just can't go for something that devastating and then pick up book two and, you know, bang, they're at it again. Like these characters, I tried to be very, you know, conscientious of my character's development and growth in their personal lives and in their professional lives.
Yes. And you know what? I really loved the beginning of book two. I was shocked. And as you read my review, I was shocked. And I thought, wow, this is really going somewhere. So I would invite anybody to pick your book up and to read book two also, because it's very, very interesting throughout, but the beginning was quite the way you wrote. I loved it. But excuse me. Anyway, and I got a little bit of a tickle in my throat. But we only have a few minutes left here, and I want to tie this up right now. But would, if someone wants to be an author or a paranormal investigator, Carolyn, what's your advice to them?
Okay. To be an author, first of all. First of all, be prepared to work hard. The writing of the story is only a small part of your journey. You know, once that's done, once you get that story down, you know, there's the whole next, you know, part of the journey, which is getting it ready to go out and then promoting it. That whole self-promotion thing as a self-published author is a ton of work. And yeah. You're going to pour your soul and heart into it, and you have to be prepared for the ups and downs of the good reviews and the bad reviews and the weeks with good sales and the weeks with crappy sales. It's important to find like-minded people. I discovered, you know, a ton of support groups on Facebook, with all self-published authors who help support each other and promote each other. And as I say, it's been some of those people that have gotten me through some of these downhill things when I've got negative reviews, or, you know, helped to, you know, kind of, you know, be there to support me when I was hesitant on publishing. Basically expect maximum effort for minimum gain, especially at first. I'm obviously writing a series, and, you know, what I've been told by several people is, you know, if you're writing in a series, you really need to wait until you have 3 completed books in the series before people are really going to start to take it seriously, because they want to make sure that the author is committed to the story before they themselves become invested in it, in their time and their money. Because, I mean, there was one author whose books I love, and it was a series, and we got book 2, and the publisher dropped it.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, where's the rest of it?
Yeah.
So people will wait.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. We were kind of running low on time here. I just want to make sure we get it all in. But what about being a paranormal investigator real quick? What's your advice for
absolutely.
Them?
Absolutely. Because to me, this is important, and because we see this ourselves with people that want to be guests or people that want to join your team. The first thing you have to ask yourself is, why do you want to be a paranormal investigator? If you're thinking, well, I've watched the shows and it looks really cool and exciting, you need to step back. You need to step back. Those
exactly.
are all the wrong reasons. Those
yes,
are TV
absolutely.
Shows. They have big budgets. They have production
that's right.
companies. We don't do those things. As
that's
you know,
right.
we go into people's homes. We have people that think they have something in their home that's affecting their children.
Yeah.
So we're there. Our first priority is to help the families. We
yeah.
don't get
well,
paid
Carolyn,
to do these things.
Oh. Carolyn, if you ever want to come to Minnesota, you got a place in our team, because you're right there with where we believe, too. We're not about fame. We're about not about any of that. We're about helping people. And I'm sorry to have to cut you short. We could probably spend another hour talking about these things. And real quick
yep.
here, we got about 10 seconds. Where can people find you?
People can find me on Facebook. They can just look for Carolyn Bennett Writer, because there's a million Carolyn Bennetts. On Twitter at Carol_Bennett64. And they can email me at Carolyn.Bennett64@hotmail.com. And they can find my books on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and Chapters and Indigo.
Very good. Carolyn, thank you so much, and best of luck to you. I know we'll be hearing from you again.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thank you, Robin, for having me. I've really enjoyed myself this evening.
Great.
Yeah,
good night.
It was great talking to you.
Good
thank
night.
You, Robin. Good night.
Good night.
Well, we got 60 seconds here, the lady's telling me, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with MJ Morris in her book, The Tempest, The Chronicles of Xania, and that's on January 5th. So Happy New Year, everybody. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to the ones that prefer that. And Robin, we usually say at the end of our program, let the story begin. Pick up that pen, folks, and get writing. And let the story begin. Merry Christmas, Robin.
You too, hon, and everybody else. Good night.
Your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking.